It's Arts Live and Local, and this is Carol, your host. I wish the rest of the world were as peaceful and lucky as we are. We do have a few things to commemorate and to work very hard to make sure that they don't go away. Some of the things we want to go away, this one we don't. We're commemorating on January 22nd, 1973, the decision in Roe v. Wade granting reproductive choice to women. What a concept. Thanks for being here, folks. Stay tuned. Got a full show. Bob Pyle sitting right here with me now. You'll hear from him soon.
When that baby well, is a child, it will suffer from neglect.
Okay, well, I think that says it all. That's the priorities that apparently some people have. Not me. So let's just give a thought to that and realize that it is up to each and every one of us to search our own conscience and make a decision about the value of life and what that really means. And speaking of the value of life, there's someone here I already mentioned. Bob Pyle is here with me. He has a good grasp on the value of life, that's for sure. He's been writing for a number of years, but right now he's got a brand new, almost brand new, book, and it's a book of poetry, which is a little bit different. The name is The Evolution of the Genus Iris, and tonight at 7:30 p.m. at Gala in Astoria, you will be able to hear him talk about this, not just talk about, but read from and answer questions and sign books for you. So let me welcome Bob. Glad to have you here.
Hi, Carol. It's so good to be back. It's been a couple of years, I think.
And oh, gosh, is it that long?
Oh, maybe. We've visited so many times over the years, but this is the first time we get to talk about poetry.
I know. Well, now, how did that happen? Why poetry? What's going on?
Well, poetry's everything. Poetry's at the root of everything, isn't it? And I'm working on a poem based on John Steinbeck's Voyage to the Sea of Cortez, and Steinbeck said, the only commandment that life really has is to stay alive, and that's what you were just talking about. And staying alive is one thing that poetry concerns itself with. I've been writing poetry, Carol, all my life, really, in a way, bad poetry. My fourth grade teacher encouraged me to write poems about nature and conservation in 1956, and I still have that poem I wrote then, In the Forest Lives the Deer, Brave, Bold, and Sincere. But you know, in high school, so many of us were dissuaded from poetry, both by the way it was presented and asked to read things when we were way too young and not to read them naturally and so on. So it was a long time till I started writing poetry again. And just in the past 15 years or so, it's become very important in my life. I got to travel with a number of wonderful poets when I was touring for the Orion Society and hear them. And that's when I really started reading a lot more and writing a lot more poetry.
So that's interesting that you, that it kind of bled over from Companions because you've been writing for so long and yet, and the poetry was there, but kind of quiet and suddenly it erupted. But I didn't realize, did you say 15 years in the last 15 years?
I think 15 to 20 years I've been quite serious about poetry, trying to become a better poet. I've written longer than that. But as I say, a lot of bad poems, you've got to do that.
Well, when they're not in the book, however. Let's make sure everybody knows that.
I don't think they're in the book.
No.
But no, it's quite true that the past few years I've been writing and publishing poems, but not making a big thing out of it. I've read from time to time. I read at the River Theater and at Rain and things like that. But
one at a time, basically.
One at a time, essentially. Yeah. And then finally, I had enough a body of work. I had three residencies that enabled me to pull it together and produce the manuscript.
Okay, so that's a good thing to put out there, that supporting the arts allows that to grow, giving you the opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. The Sitka Center for Arts and Ecology, the Fish Trap Writing Community both gave me retreats, and the third one I gave myself, but it worked just as well. And otherwise, I wouldn't have had the manuscript. And then I was very, very lucky to have the manuscript accepted by the first publisher I approached, which was the one I wanted.
Wow.
It's called Lost Horse Press. They're in Sandpoint, Idaho, and they're very respected for their beautiful books of poetry. So I'm deeply honored to be published by them, as I am honored to be reading in Kala tonight.
Of course. Now, that means if they're publishers of poetry, that you haven't published with them before.
No, it's a new publisher for me. That's right. I am, however, working on a second book of poems that I will be submitting to them next month.
Once you get going, huh? Are you still writing your other works? And your works, when I say your works, anyone who's not familiar with you, they run the gamut from... I'm thinking about the butterflies, and there are some pretty heavy books, and there are these tiny little books that are so dense and pithy. What's it called? Sky Time and Gray's River, where I read one piece at a time, and that put the book down so I could just let the lusciousness come through me. And,
thank you.
But then you've got Bigfoot.
And other big books, and some quite big books in recent years. I was visiting the other day, last week, with David Gooderson, the novelist. We're collaborating on something. He's got a new book of poems out, too, from the same publisher as I have. And we agreed that at the current time, at this time, neither of us have a contract for a big book that we have to deliver for the first time in many years. And it's
nice.
Really rather nice. So I've been working on kind of curating, getting books out of print, back into print, pulling together believe it or not, Carol, 50-year selected prose volume for Oregon State University Press from 65 to 2015. And I've got a novel with a publisher that I've been working on for a long time. Hope they'll go for it. So rather than writing a new, bigger book, I've been really working on poetry.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting. Got something you want to read us?
Sure.
That would be lovely.
This is from the all-year field trip I took around the country in 2008 for my big book called Mariposa Road. There were lots of things that didn't go into that book. It's called Life Can Be Like This Sometimes. Sitting in Discount Tire in Albuquerque for your second pair of tires in a month, steel belts showing through because your struts are shot on an endless road trip, thousands of miles of interstate behind, and you have to be in Long Beach tomorrow. Or, chin deep in Florida, Blackwater River, alligators at bay as far as you know, swallowtails dripping from wild azaleas overhead and swallow-tailed kites over them, pileated and red-belly, hooting and yaffling their woodpecker songs, and you, with no place else to be in a hurry. Take your pick.
I started chuckling right away because just yesterday I was having my tires rotated. There you are.
Well, that's a good time to work on the draft of a poem.
There you go. Well, I'm wondering whether, because when I listen to this, I hear some of that same very rich imagery as in your stories, but it's concise. The discipline that must be...
That's such a great pleasure in poetry and such a discipline. You know, I wrote my essay column, The Tangled Bank for Orion for 10 years, and I didn't have very many words, and so that was very different from my longer essays, and that was an MFA in concision right there. So I think that carried through and has helped a lot in the poetry. Poetry gets to the bone of things. It gets right down there. You can write with the fewest words possible, and it's such a joy, but it doesn't make it easier than writing a big, long book.
Oh, I would think it would be harder. You have to cull and cull and cull.
So many people
get to the essence,
harder
for sure.
To write short, and I go through many drafts for every poem.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm wondering whether, I didn't realize you'd been writing for that long, but I'm wondering whether the writing of the poetry has in any way changed your way of seeing or being.
It's changed my way of being so much this year. You know that I lost Tia a year ago.
Yeah.
You loved her as I did.
I did.
And
I still do, and I know you do for sure.
Yeah, I do, and it's been a heck of a year. And so the poetry has helped a lot this year. And I've been going around the state a lot with this book for the past year. This is kind of the culminus of my tour tonight at Kala. And it's made me stronger and along with the loved people around me.
Mm-hmm. So you did do a reading with Florence at the library. Are we going to hear? What are we going to hear? How is it different?
Thanks.
Why should folks come?
Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
Florence
Sage. That was wonderful.
Well, it was. I was so honored. Florence Sage is a magnificent poet, and she was the last poet at Kala, so it's a hard act to follow. But she very kindly asked me to share the podium with her at the library last month, and so I opened for her, and that was a real treat. That was one of the most enjoyable readings that I've given in a long time. Well, tonight I'm going to read mostly different poems. There'll be two or three poems that I'll repeat that I read at the library, but most of them will not be. We're not on that program. And I'm going to read two sets. And the first set will be poems from The Evolution of the Genus Iris, but, as I say, different ones from the library for the most part, and different from what I'm reading here today, too.
Okay.
And then the second half is going to be new poems or older poems that didn't make it into the first book.
Okay. Well, when you say the name, too, it makes me wonder again. What does it mean, Evolution of the Genus Iris? Now, we know that you are a naturalist and I was going to say biologist, but it's not biology. What is the...
I'm a biologist by training. I am a naturalist by inclination. I am a biologist by training. And so everything I look at, I filter through that lens. And I think that evolutionary biology and natural selection are the organizing principle of life, along with love. And so I look at things through that filter. I also am a great... lover of the language of Vladimir Nabokov. You know, I got to co-edit the big book of his butterfly writings, and he spoke about looking at the world for its individuating details. So to me, it's finding those specific details of the real physical world, which I've always done in my prose.
Yes.
Finding the concision and the beauty of a good poem, aspiring toward that. Don't know if I've written one yet. Mm-hmm. And putting them together through this lens of this glorious lens of evolution. So that poem is actually a poem about evolution, but it starts with my grandmother's old purple irises in Denver, and it comes down to the wild irises of these hills, and the final lines are, when their extravagant blooms fold in upon themselves and rot, even as the next night purple spear unfurls, their ink bleeds from the same deep well.
Mm.
So that's a poem about the roots that all irises have in common and that all life has in common.
You know, Bob, I have to say, I am loving your writing of poetry and your reading. I've always appreciated your presentation.
Thank you so much.
But what's interesting is I find it, as I said, with the reading of the book, I had to read a little bit and then wait it out.
Sure.
Here I find I'm able to get around it. More easily. I'm not sure if that's explainable or if it's just me, but it feels more accessible in a way, it's wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah. And it is explainable, Carol. I think we all have lots of things going on in our lives. Attention spans decline, even for those of us who still read and still do pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
It's asking something of someone to read a long essay. You have to sit for some time. Now, writing essays, you can go in most of my books, you can pick it up here, pick it up there, put it down. I hope with my novel, someone will feel like going start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessary with the books of essay. But you're still asking for an hour or so's attention. With a poem, you can ask for someone's attention for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to read it again, maybe 10 or two. And that's a secret trick of the poet. However, you're working against the fact that most people don't think they can read poems. Most people don't
read
poems.
That's very true.
They're
very
put off by poems in school. So if you can convince them that the poems, A, are accessible, they do tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are funny.
Mm-hmm.
I write about war as well, but they're not all funny by any means. But they touch the experience of the reader. That's the central thing. And they don't take very long to do that. And they can have a reaction. Of course, that's the greatest thing for the reader. I mean, excuse me, for the writer, if there is a reaction in the reader, if they take time to write you a note or tell you that poem affected
them. Good feedback out there, audience. Well, I'd like you to read, if you have another short one,
I do.
Just to close up. But the way you just explained that, I'm thinking, because oftentimes I have to go back for my reference. Like sometimes you'll be talking and then I had to go back. Well, with a poem, it's a lot. It's a lot easier. Read it all the way through, and then go back and read it all the way through.
It's right there for you, and it's easy to do. And it can be hard to engage deeply with the poem, but I don't think my poems are hard to engage with deeply. I'm not much of a metaphorist, and I do love metaphor, but I mean, mm-hmm. these are not symbolic poems. They're about actual things.
And they're also, what is it? I've been taking the class Philosophy of Art with Seth Titchener, so I'm going to use the word aesthetic. The senses engaged totally when you're with your poetry.
It's my intention that they should do that. Yeah. And if I can bring a few more readers to poems, I will have been greatly satisfied.
Okay, let's have one more poem from Robert Michael Pyle, Bob Pyle, who will be reading tonight at Gala. That's K-A-L-A, 1017 Marine Drive, right between 10th and 11th in Astoria, 7:30 this evening. From his new book, Evolution of the Genus Iris, and then a book signing will follow.
Thank you, Carol. This is another outtake from my long 2008 journey around the country, story that didn't make it into the book, but the image has never left me.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Early Morning in Wyoming. I know you'll like it because there's a dog in it.
Right.
Three tall, slender sisters climb down from the cab of a pickup pulling a horse box. They wear ball caps, two red, one brown, over long braids, moving smoothly in form-fitting wool, willowy and shy, barely notice the old-timer waking up in his jalopy. Offload two chestnuts and a gray, lead them onto the range, run them in circles by their bridles to warm them up. Then, two bareback, one saddled, they mount. Shyness shed, self-possessed on horseback, trot over the ridge, blonde braids flying, border collies bouncing. Disappear into the sage, three female centaurs, loping off to do something ancient with dogs and cattle.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And I am so glad you read that, because I told my daughter, who lives in Wyoming, about that. And now I can grab the poem and, you know, maybe buy a book for her.
I was going to say, a better idea might be to grab the whole book and send it for Christmas.
I realize for now.
Yes.
For now.
Right.
Okay. Thank you so much,
Carol,
Bob Pyle. It's wonderful.
You're such a pro. It's such fun to watch you. Thank you for having me again.
You bet. Bye-bye. And I have a piece of music now from Jim Page. And this is commemorating yet another event. It's this period seems to be very rich in not so happy things. This one is Citizens United. It's been 5 years. Let's get rid of it. That's my personal opinion. Well, that's our own Jim Page from Eugene now, used to be from Seattle. And the name of the cut is Take Our Culture Back. Yes, free speech indeed. Speech is by human beings. And if you can't be, well, there's a lot of things. We won't go on about it. I think you all get the point. Let's do something about it now. 5 years, Citizens United. Well, the good part of Citizens United is us. We are the citizens, and we are here, and we're united in supporting the arts. Isn't that right?
Absolutely.
I have Rosemary Baker Monahan here from the Liberty Theater. She's the executive director. And much to a lot of our kind of like, what? How did that happen, right?
Yeah.
90 years. Yeah. We're about to kick off the celebration of 90 years of the Liberty Theater in Astoria. So it was 1925.
April 4th.
April 4th. Okay, I did not remember
that. The official birthday. You were here in 1925.
No,
absolutely.
But no, I wasn't, but I was. I was here when we did the recreation.
Right.
And I got to stand there as copying that original photo.
That was so fun.
That was great fun. Yeah. So the Liberty Theater is a gem of a place. And it started out as a vaudeville theater, didn't it?
It did. Class A Vaudeville House, and then a movie palace, and then by the 90s, it was a triplex.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is pretty hilarious. Of course, yeah. the two other parts of the theater, and that's only because citizens, again, united and stood yeah. up and said, no, you cannot take our beautiful theater away. If you need more movie theater, so they stuck a couple of plywood boxes up there.
And, they did.
And I went and saw films there, too. Little place, but...
I think the last one that was on was Analyze This with Robert De Niro.
Oh,
I don't
really?
Know for sure, but I think we have John Gutenberger to thank because I understand is that when the theater changed hands and they were going to put those plywood boxes in, he happened to stop by and convince them not to destroy anything, just put the boxes up.
Right.
So that when all that was dismantled, all the good stuff was still there.
Which is what was so exciting. Yeah. I mean, there are all kinds of stories. Somebody wanted to buy the paintings off the wall.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Amazing. So if you haven't been to the Liberty, tomorrow is your chance in many ways. So Rosemary, why don't you tell us what's going on tomorrow at the Liberty?
Oh, I'd be glad to. It's also our 10th anniversary since we had our grand reopening.
Oh,
we did the first two phases of the renovation. You were mentioning how wow it is that it's 90th mm-hmm. anniversary. It's also wow that it's been 10 years that we've been operating. I can't
hard
fathom
to believe.
That. Yeah, it's gone by so fast.
Yeah, life but, does these days.
Yikes.
But that's another story. Yes.
We digress. we are open for tours in case you haven't been in the last 10 years since we've been open. And there's a few people I know still out there who haven't made it in there. Shame, I say shame. But
there's
your
some
chance.
People who have never been.
Even more shame.
By the way, we should tell them, though, 12th and Commercial is where the Liberty Theater is. You can't miss it.
Well, there you go. We've got a big sign,
right.
You know, out front. But we're open for tours from 1 to 3, and it's no charge. We're also normally open when there's a cruise ship in town, too, if you can't make it tomorrow. But we hope you'll come tomorrow. We have some wonderful volunteers who have studied the history a bit and are kind of more docents than ushers, and they'll be there to help answer questions, and there's a little visitor's guide. You'll come in the front doors, see the theater, see the McTavish Room, end up in the Paulson Pavilion where we'll have birthday cake.
Woohoo!
And
I hope there's chocolate. I don't know.
There's chocolate and vanilla,
okay,
from
good.
What I understand.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Then I'll have some.
Okay. I always insist on chocolate.
Good.
There's two puppet shows, too.
Yeah, what is that?
Jeannie Rich, our local wonderful Jeannie Rich. It has a show called, Colossal Claudia Returns, and she's scaled down her puppet show to 10 minutes, and it's about the Columbia River sea monster, which I didn't realize that we had one.
Well, I know one that's out there, but we're fighting to get rid of it. But this is a different one, I suspect.
We digress again, yes. So a little 10-minute puppet show at 1:30 and 2:15.
Okay. And where is that going to be? In the theater?
Well, up by the Paulson Pavilion, we have office
that.
Now that has the roll top window.
Okay.
And so we've staged that as a little mini stage. It's really cute. It's all set up right
now. So if you get there, the open house is 1 to 3,
one
is that
to three,
right? Okay.
Yeah.
So if you get there, though, around 1:30 or something, go right on upstairs, and you can go up the ramp. That's the funnest way because it's a gorgeous ramp. But if you're not able to, there is an elevator that will be working.
Yep.
So get on up there so you can catch the puppet show because that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
And then be sure to come in. Come all the way inside because there is a chandelier that you must see.
And the paintings. You have to get
and the
past
paintings.
The balcony.
Right. Yeah, you have to come all the way in. And then what happens tomorrow?
Well, we also are having a dinner in the McTavish Room, but we're really close to having that full.
Mm-hmm.
I think we only have about 4 seats left.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do want to come to that, the ticket for that includes the concert. And there'll be some reminiscing and just kind of a celebration. And we're really saying thank you to the community because the community is the one who dreamed this dream and saved the theater and helped us restore it. And so it's just a celebratory dinner. And then we have a concert at 7 o'clock.
And so if people want to go for the dinner, they have to call the theater
call
right
Call Tom
right
in the box
now.
Office, yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
That's 503-325-5922, extension 55.
Right.
Okay? Don't worry about the extension. The thing will tell you that, but
we've got Larry's voice on there giving you a
right.
little talk.
5922. And then the concert is at 7 o'clock. What can you tell us about that?
Well, you can get a ticket just for the concert.
Probably at the door? Or
Earlier is better. It yeah. always makes me sleep at night knowing that there's a whole bunch of people coming. If you wait till the last day, I get pretty stressed out because I worry.
So call the theater.
Yeah, it would be good to get a ticket today. Yeah, it's Ken Levine, and he does a show called The Road to Carnegie Hall. And one of the reasons why we're having him be the performer, besides he's fabulous and he's such an amazing singer, he tells stories about how he made it to Carnegie Hall, and then he sings a little bit of opera, a little bit of contemporary, just beautiful voice. You can Google his website and click on a few songs and listen to him sing.
Okay, but I have to tell you how he spells his name. This is the most creative spelling of Levine that I've ever heard. It's Lavigne.
Uh-huh.
I don't know where that came from, but are you sure it's pronounced Levine? Or is
it's Levine.
It is
he's
Levine?
He's from Victoria in Canada.
Okay. Oh, it must be a Canadian thing then.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's it. The concert actually starts at 7.
Right. The doors will open at 6:30 for that.
So if you, yeah. So if you don't have a ticket and you didn't get to call one in, come on over 6:30, 6:45 later. Don't come at 7 and, you know, then everybody's in there. The doors are closed and, you know, it's kind of a pain in the butt. But do come.
Please.
Yeah.
It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful day. It's going to be an amazing concert. You know, the comparisons with it's kind of all about dreaming the dream and all working together to accomplish something. And that happened for Ken Levine in his life to get to Carnegie Hall. And that's happened for Astoria to save this beautiful theater. So
I'm wondering now, he's a tenor, I know.
He is.
Is he going to be accompanied or what?
He will. There'll be a pianist. We'll have our Steinway concert D out there, which is so lovely, and a bass player and a violinist.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's a full trio there behind Ken Levine with his storytelling, classical and contemporary music. And that's all at 7 at the Liberty. If you're interested in the dinner, which starts at 5:15.
Yeah, the doors will open at 5.
Yeah, but you better call right now. Yeah. Because
very
it's almost
seats.
Sold out. And again, that's 503-325-5922, extension 55. And for sure, needless to say, those both cost some money, but the open house does not. From 1 to 3, just drop on by, come on in, and have a look at this beautiful theater. And even if you've been there before, you might not have seen the upstairs completely.
The Paulson, yeah. We are having a special offer because it's a celebration and we'd like as many people there as possible. If you're an artist or a performer or a musician, we would love you to be our guest at the concert. And so, but you'll need to call Tom or stop at the box office and get a complimentary ticket.
Okay.
We won't make you sing for your ticket.
Okay.
If you tell us you're a singer, we're going to believe you.
No, maybe. We might make you sing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tom might make you do a tap dance.
That's
but other
true.
Than that, yeah.
No,
but
that
we'd
sounds,
love to have you be
lovely.
Our guest.
That's lovely. Lovely invitation.
You know, we're celebrating this accomplishment.
So this is all happening tomorrow to celebrate the Liberty Theater's 90th and the 10-year anniversary of the reopening. And it is a beautiful place, so come on by. Thanks, Rosemary.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Rosemary Baker Monahan, the executive director of the Liberty Theater. Again, that's 12th and Commercial. Hope to see you there. And I have one last commemoration happening right now, and that is that on January 27th, 1945, the concentration camps of Auschwitz and Birkenau were liberated. That was actually one camp divided in two. That was a liberation. Yeah. And that's Anne Feeney with Flowers of Auschwitz. So, yeah, it's a powerful time right now. And I also want to make mention that we've lost yet another friend in this community, a wonderful volunteer. So My wishes go out to Melissa, all her friends and family. And right now I have in the studio for the 9th annual International Juried Exhibit. Yeehaw! It's Au Naturel, the nude in the 21st century, and the show is up and it is fabulous. So Kristen Schock is here with me. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Carol.
And Kristen is the instructor at the college for drawing, design, and painting. Did I get that right?
You got that right, yes.
and she also instituted this particular show when she moved here. She said, hey, we got to do this. And they did. It wasn't easy, but they did. And now it's an amazing show. Artists from all over the world sending in their work, including local or relatively local artists. I guess my other guest qualifies as local. Reed Clark is here. Hi, Reed.
Hi.
And you live in Portland and Gearhart, is that right?
I do, yes.
Okay. So you're definitely local. That's it. And do you have other, you do, you have other locals?
Kitty Pano is in once again, as well as Ben Rosenberg, who
from the
teaches our printmaking class as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he has a place down in Manzanita as well as
and
Portland.
Kitty lives right here in
Kitty
Astoria.
Kitty lives right here in Astoria, yeah.
That's pretty exciting. And when the work is judged, it's a blind...
Actually,
no.
We can make it blind, but we don't have to. And the judge, it's not in the, you know, guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
The judge specifically, because I asked her, did she want to judge it blind or not blind? And she actually requested not to have it blind. I know Jane Beebe did a lot of research when she was selecting the artists. She looked at their websites and she did a lot of extra.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of extra research.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, before we even get into the rest of the show, tell us about the judge this time. Barbara Shaiman, is it?
Barbara Shaiman.
Shaiman.
She's based in Seattle, and she, for many years, 24 years, was the director of the Seattle Art Museum's rental sales gallery. So she is an independent curator now as well. What she also does is she's a curator at the Alexis Hotel. As well, as independently.
Okay.
She does.
And she's also an artist, though, isn't she?
She has done ceramics.
Ceramic. Isn't that interesting,
yes,
though?
It is. Working ceramic artist. Yeah. Yes.
And this show is all 2D.
It is.
Right.
It is.
So it's interesting that she's doing this. Okay. So I mentioned to both my guests that I actually went over yesterday to see the show because, unlike sometimes, this show is already up. The reason we're talking now, though, is that the artist's reception is the 29th. That will be a week from last night. So we want to let everybody know Thursday the 29th at 6 p.m. is when everybody is invited to meet some of the artists, I hope.
Yes, we have, I know, one for sure coming all the way from New York. We have quite a few artists from Portland and Seattle who'll be coming down. Usually we have between 12 and 15 artists. We have 41 artists total in
the really?
Show.
Okay.
Yeah.
I find it absolutely delightful to get to meet some of the artists. And the one from New York is actually from Ithaca.
That's right, she is.
Where I went to school, so I'm looking forward to meeting her too. And then you're having an after party, did I read that somewhere?
Right, and we've had an after party,
but
I think,
I've never seen it announced.
We have maybe some kind of same place as we had it last year at the Coffee House.
At the Astoria Coffee House and Bistro, which is on 11th and near Marine Drive. So, Kristen, you don't enter this show.
Oh, no, I've never entered. No, because I organize it.
That'd be a little... Okay,
a little awkward.
So, Reed, you have been showing your art in Astoria as well, I'm sure, as Portland and other for a long time. What have you been doing the nudes for a long time as well, or did you start doing it for this show, or what's the story? Why do nudes?
Well, that's a good
question.
That's
a lot of questions.
You know, I have always done life drawing as kind of a discipline, and I think it's a great discipline in art, very challenging. but I never, although I paint figuratively, didn't typically paint the nude as a subject. But I started painting it almost, I would say, for this show. I heard, 6 years ago was first I heard of the show, and Laura Russo from the Laura Russo Gallery in Portland, who's very well known there, was the juror. And there was quite a buzz in Portland that she was juring the show. And so I thought, well, what the heck? I'll paint some things and submit them. And
did you get in?
I did get in that year.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Boy. And you might have thought, well, maybe this is beginner's luck. But it wasn't. It was not luck. It was skill and dedication.
Well, you know, this is his fifth year, I believe, have been accepted, so I think he holds the record now as the artist he's been in the most number of times.
So I'm starting to think maybe it isn't luck.
You're starting to think? Well, I could have told you that from the beginning, because I've been an admirer of your work, your portraiture.
Thank you.
And mostly it has been the head and up, or not head, below, but you know. But this time you have the whole body. But I was reading something that you wrote about that really your work it transcends the subject. Tell us about that. You basically want it to exist as a good painting.
Yeah, that's the goal. And it, you know, it could be maybe hard to explain to someone who doesn't paint or have that discipline, but I read a quote recently by a well-known artist that said, who does paint figuratively, has people in his paintings, but he said, I don't paint people, I paint images. And the idea is, when you're painting, it may be, the subject may be a person or could be a tree, I guess, but what you're doing really is putting lines and shapes and tones and contrasts and volume. That's what you're doing. So, yeah, the subject is there, but it's not central.
Well, it's interesting because the two paintings you have, which are large, what do you know what size?
Yeah, 48 by 48 is the large one. The other is about 2 by 3 feet.
Okay. I commented before that many of the paintings in this show are quite large. More than I believe has happened before.
It could be, although one year we did have a 9-foot painting. I think that one holds the record.
Yes, but I remember it well. That
it was tricky getting that one.
Yes. That was also the one that was painted by other people. It was conceived by a man. And then
No. That was Keith Howard. The 9-foot painting, and I wish I could remember the name of the artist, but he brought it up on the he had to unstretch it. He brought it up with a frame strapped to the roof of his car, and my painting class got to restretch it.
Oh, wow.
So that was really fun for them to have that opportunity.
Yeah, how do you transport your paintings, Reed?
Well, that was funny. You know, I'm never going to do a painting that's 48 inches wide anymore because I couldn't get it in my SUV. 47 is the maximum.
Oh,
so
no, really?
I had to borrow a friend's truck to get it down.
Oh, that's
here.
Funny. Yeah, it's just like, gee, you could have measured it before, huh? Okay, well, it was well. So, in addition to Reed here and the other two local folks, you've got people from where?
All over. Well, I'm really excited that Hank Pander is in the show.
Yes.
Two big, beautiful paintings.
That
so
was,
that's really
exciting. Is this the
exciting.
First time that he's submitted?
It is the first time he's submitted, yes.
Yeah. If you don't know Hank, you got to come to the show and see him. He showed at the Maritime Museum a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. He did, and you know, that was the year Laura Russo juried the show.
Okay.
I think it was that same year.
Interesting.
And he has works in the Portland Art Museum as well as many museums around the country.
Right. Mm-hmm. He's a Dutch painter, and he's very, very well known internationally. So that was exciting to come
really
in and
exciting.
See his work.
And he'll be here for the opening.
Oh, good.
And we're also really excited to have our first artist from South Africa.
Wow.
And she was accepted to the show, but unfortunately she couldn't afford to ship her pieces. So her two pieces are displayed on our online gallery, but unfortunately they're not physically here.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Okay. Unfortunate.
Very unfortunately. Her work is beautiful.
But you See, she needs to do smaller work, too, I guess.
Well, you know, it was pretty small. It was only about 18 by 24 inches, but she checked into it. It would have cost her $500 just way to ship the work.
Yeah, obviously prohibitive.
Yeah.
Unless she had a definite buyer here, and that would have been, or a sponsor.
Right.
What about, did I read you've got someone from New Zealand?
Submitted, but not accepted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we had artwork submitted, an artist from Turkey, from New Zealand, several from Canada.
From
sadly, they weren't accepted. Some really beautiful, strong work. Not everything is accepted for whatever reason.
And how many, do you know how many?
556 images.
Were submitted.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Well, no
so
wonder
of course,
you can't.
We can't fit them all. And there was some beautiful, beautiful work that just wasn't accepted, sadly.
Yeah. So if you're a painter out there listening anywhere in the world, just think about it for
or
next
drawer
year.
Or printmaker.
That's right. No photographs. It must be by hand. Is that right?
The handmade mark, right.
Handmade mark. So is there any thing you can tell us, Kristen, about this show in terms of subject matter? We say the nude in the 21st century au naturel, but there have been.
It's a huge long tradition, and one reason I did want to bring this show here to the college is as a learning tool for our students, because we don't always have the luxury to run into Portland or wherever. And so I really wanted to bring artwork from all over the world, artists who work with the nude, for them to be able to study and learn from, because it really is at the core of our curriculum. That's been the focus of our art department for many, many years. Roy Garrison, founder of our art department, and Royal Nebaker, who also really played a huge role in helping to get this show established. He was our first juror for the show, and through his connections, it was really able to take off. And he's greatly, greatly missed in our department.
Absolutely. But it is interesting, or I should say, and it is interesting when you talked about, Reed, the fact that you connected with this show because of Laura Russo.
Right.
So the word is going out further and further.
Well, I think the word is out because the show is such quality, run so well, and they treat the artists so professionally and well that people have a great respect for this show. You know, you mentioned that people coming to the show and looking at it as a subject matter, and the nude as a subject matter is very interesting. And I would just say, if someone is interested, there's a book called A Way of Seeing, I think is the title, by John Berger, who's a British critic. And he has a chapter on the nude. Mm-hmm. He's a fairly provocative writer. And if you were to read that chapter, it would really open your eyes on some of the ideas about the history of the nude. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting to have some of those thoughts in mind when looking around the gallery and seeing different ways the nude is represented.
And that's constantly impresses me. There have been times when there is an abstract that one, if you didn't know what the name of the show was, you would have no idea.
Right.
There are also some very heart, well, including yours. I mean, that's, you know, with the embrace and that the nude part of it is almost...
Yeah, there's also a few paintings that, well, from my point of view, that are a bit, not controversial, but I mean, they push the limits on some of the kind of political things about the history of art and the nude, the way that's represented, kind of turning the feminine and the masculine upside down and presenting nude men kind of as society has traditionally presented nude women, and it kind of makes a statement that's kind of interesting.
It's constantly exciting and growing and changing, and yet you're able to be here every year. This is so exciting.
Most of them.
With a different judge every year,
that's
I might add.
That's right.
So, yeah.
Right, and the judges obviously bring their own filter and
their own interest. Their own perspective, so every year is completely different.
Absolutely. I did, I read that Barbara Scheiman, the curator for this show or the judge for this show, looked for strong visual appeal rooted in challenging ideas and pushing boundaries. Mm-hmm. So that was part of the way what she was looking for. So very exciting. Okay, folks, Au Naturel, The Nude in the 21st Century. The show is up and running, so you can, if this is your only time, or if you would like to see it in quietude, which is what I did yesterday, and it was great, I must say. I walked around at my own pace, and I got to spend the time at the college. This is, if you just go all the way up the hill in Astoria, up 16th, take a left, go as far as you can go. There's plenty of parking around there, below or above, and then you will see the gallery on your right. Are there particular hours, Kristen?
Well, the college unlocks the doors at 8 a.m. Monday through Friday, and I'll be there Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8 a.m.
Okay.
So it's open till at least 6 o'clock, mm-hmm. But Monday through Thursday, we're open till 9.
Oh, wow.
Saturday's 11 to 4, and then Sunday's by appointment. And please come up and vote for your favorite piece. We have a People's Choice Award.
Okay.
So we also have first, second, third cash awards that the judge will be announced. We'll be announcing those prizes on Thursday.
And then you also have, you give out a solo show.
We have a solo show.
There's lots there's a lot of stuff going on here. And one of the nice things, too, that happens at this opening is that artists meet each other. Mm-hmm. And what a blast that is. Mm-hmm. So come on up on Thursday evening, 6 to 8, and then afterwards over at the Astoria Coffee House and Bistro on 11th and Marine Drive. Come to see the show anytime. It is up through March 5th. So you've got plenty of time. If you're not in town around at this point, come another time. So, okay, thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so mm-hmm. much for coming in. And congratulations, Reed, for another hit show.
Thank you.
To Kristen for the hit show, to Reed for being in the hit show. How's that?
Many, many times, yes.
Yes, thanks so much. And I want to play a little bit of the Dickel Brothers.
One!
You haven't heard them around here for a long time. They're going to be at the Sou'wester in Seaview tomorrow evening. That's the 24th. And what else is happening? Lion in Winter at the Barn Community Playhouse tonight and tomorrow and Sunday at 2. Sandtrap has Chris Marshall and the August Light. Seaside High School, Motown Review tonight. The Adrift, the Jackalope Saints. And they are going to also be on Crossroads tomorrow. Bob Pyle at Gala at 7:30 tonight. And the Hoffman has the Best of the 40th. Northwest Film and Video Fest. Tomorrow, there's an Argentine tango class at the Astoria Arts and Movement Center. It's a workshop from 5:30 to 7. No partner necessary. Head on over there and check it out. A regular class is beginning in March. And there'll be this class and then one on the 28th. Peninsula Performing Arts Center has a speakeasy dinner dance with Boy and Bean. It's swing jazz trio. You must call them. And that is 360-901-0962. Let them know you want to come. That's tomorrow night, dinner and dance and music. Liberty's 90th all day tomorrow. And Tillamook County Pioneer Museum, What We Want from the Wild, Pie Day Auction at the Clover Grange, and a teen theater club meeting. Sunday, Seaside Brewing has Seth Brewster, Fort George, Jonah Tolkien, and Polecat. Sunday Afternoon Live has a wonderful soprano, Marie-Jose Lord at the Raymond Theater, and the Lower Columbia Diversity Project at 2 o'clock at the Boynton Building, Understanding Diversity with Jill Crawford Hurt. And the Cedar Shakes are at the Sou'wester at 9 o'clock, big party. And that's all I've got time. Oh, don't forget Liberty Theater on 7 o'clock on Wednesday and Thursday has Reader's Theater, all in the timing. And then the Clatsop Community College Gallery on Thursday evening. Thanks for being here.